You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we have no choice but to record this podcast, because if we go outside, we'll be arrested. Well, at least William will. I can go out all day, just not after 11 p.m. Between 11 p.m. and 5 a.m., I'd be arrested. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and that's right, you heard correctly, Midsiders. Even Florida. Now, I want to be clear. Let me be clear. Governor Rick DeSantis hasn't said anything about the entire state. The curfew is in Orange County and Osceola County. Now, Orange County, I don't know what the final vote was, but in the Democratic primary, I think Orange County was one of the few places Bernie Sanders was leading in the Democratic primary recently. I didn't check the rest of the results because who cares about the Democratic primaries right now? But I don't know what that, maybe this is just the more leftist area of the state. I don't know. So it's not the entire state, but here in my county, Osceola County and Orange County, you can't go out between 11 p.m. and 5 a.m. and it is enforceable via law. So is my county of Florida under martial law? I don't know. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
How did I end up in the freest part of the country?
It's because there's so much logjam there that you're so far behind in your oppression. They just haven't got there yet. And by the time they get there, this is all going to be over.
Yeah. The DMV area, the District, Maryland, Virginia area, all three jurisdictions are treating this very differently. None have quite yet enacted any kind of martial law. And Virginia, even their restaurants are still open, if you can believe that. So, you know, freedom in Virginia to some degree. But we are doing the typical things around here of closing most businesses or asking them to be closed. No official law yet about closing businesses, unlike Pennsylvania and New York and California. I don't know. So the craziness has not quite yet gotten here, mostly because it's all going to the federal government. So we're in a crazy vacuum, because Donald Trump's administration keeps sucking it all up at the moment.
Yeah, those are the states. I also don't know what's going on in Washington. Did we just, write off Washington? Because no one's reporting on it anymore, right?
Yeah, they're gone. They're all dead.
Washington's just dead. Which is funny, because that's where most of the deaths have been. Or they were at one point. Remember, they were, half the deaths for a while from that one nursing home?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's interesting that they're all handling it differently. And I want to be clear that it's, even though the county has a curfew in place, it's not the people. No one's freaking out. Like I've heard, and you know, when I introduce William in a second, maybe you can follow it up. I've heard that in California, there's lines at drive-thrus and stuff. It takes a long time to get food from restaurants. I went to Wendy's yesterday and there was no other cars in line. So I don't think the citizens are freaking out here. And it's funny in this county, especially because there were 8 cases, 8 cases, 15 cases, 15 cases. So there's an element of containment or non-transmission, yet they're still freaking out. And I think we'll get into that later.
No freak out here yet either in our area. Grocery stores are still stocked other than toilet paper, because I think people come from out of this area to buy all of our toilet paper. But stores are basically fully stocked here.
You can't even buy toilet paper on Amazon, Daniel. You can't even buy toilet paper on Amazon.
What has the world come to?
I don't understand. I have 3 rolls left. So
countdown. We're going to have to give an update every episode.
I'm actually kind of considering putting out a plea and saying if any of you stocked up way too much, maybe just ship me some, because you don't need all that. You don't need it all. And I'm
20
not
bucks a roll, Justin.
Yeah.
20 bucks
okay,
a roll.
Okay, that's the problem. That's the problem. I can buy it on eBay for 50 bucks. I'm not going to buy it on eBay for 50 bucks. They're selling on eBay. I actually looked on eBay for toilet paper. $5 a roll, and then the big packs are 50 bucks. I will not pay that much for toilet paper. I will wash my ass in the tub before I pay that much for toilet paper. All right, let's bring in William. Also joining us from Dale's lawn, identifying as a woman to forego his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Man, what an exciting week. I got three things to bring up real quick. First one is I'm hearing really well today. I know most of you know I had a little minor surgery a couple weeks ago to help restore my hearing, and today and yesterday have been excellent days. Actually, turning my head to the left because I'm hearing things on the left, which is really cool. So I'm really excited about that. And then I have two things for Daniel. First of all, Daniel, where is Joe Biden, and what have you done with him? Because he has been nowhere. He had that weird press conference where he wandered off the stage while talking on a live stream, and I've seen all these tweets mocking him, talking about his leadership in this time of need. He's just disappeared. All the oxygen is gone. Where is he?
He has dusted off my campaign strategy for Hillary Clinton from 2016, which is, if you open the manila folder, it's a piece of paper that just says, stay home, say nothing, win the election. Which at this point, with the economy crashing and everything going to hell, the best thing Joe Biden can do for his election chances are to be away from all cameras, all microphones, any media whatsoever. He should stay away from pencils and paper. Anything that could record him doing anything. He should stay away from mimeograph machines. He should stay away from anything that could record him doing anything. And that is his best chance of winning this election, is to be a ghost until November, when people can just go, anyone but the guy who ran the greatest economy in the world into the ground.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's also old, so he should just stay in private.
He only just recently learned that there was this thing called the internet that you could broadcast on. So
that was one of the greatest videos ever. If you haven't seen that, look up Joe Biden's video conference where he's just walking out in and out of frame, talking to people, basically going, is this on? Hello? It's fantastic.
It is fantastic. And the third thing for you, is again for you, Daniel. So I've been using the extra time here in isolation to scour the internet to do things that I've been meaning to do for the longest time. And I finally downloaded. There's these group of film nerds who have meticulously captured and restored in 4K glory all of the Star Wars from the original films. So one is called 4K77 for New Hope. They've cobbled it together from many different sources, some of them being original film scans. And you can get the DNR and non-DNR version, so digital noise reduction, and it is stunning. And so I've spent the time to download it and convert it so it'll work on Plex. Which is a way to share media inside of your house. So I can now 4K stream A New Hope, and I'm working on Empire Strikes Back next, to any television in my house in all of its film original glory.
If I was legally allowed to visit you, I would do so right now.
It's amazing.
My God. Star Wars. Dark Web Star Wars. It's fantastic.
Man, maybe there isn't a Snyder Cut, because I feel like if there was, they would have been able to figure out how to do that with it already.
Do you want me to? I mean, I'm so far in the dark web, I could look left and see if I can find the Snyder Cut while I'm there.
There's a statistical chance it's on there, so if you find anything, let us know.
All right.
Let's transition into more interesting things when we talk about entertainment and the pandemic in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
Before we hit that news hard, I want to remind you about Patreon. Patreon.com/TheMidSide, where you can go to give us a couple bucks every time we produce a show telling you not to panic. Someone else who isn't panicking this week is everyone's favorite star from Lost, Evangeline Lilly, who says
well, she's
on
not
her...
Matthew Fox, so she's up there.
Who said on her Instagram a few days ago that she's not going to self-quarantine during the coronavirus pandemic, despite the advice from health professionals and organizations to stay home. She said, quote, "Just dropped my kids off at gymnastics camp. They all wash their hands before going in. They are playing and laughing. Hashtag business as usual," end quote. We'll get back to that in a second. The post, of course, received significant backlash, as thousands of comments accuse Lily of being selfish and not taking the spread of the virus seriously.
Lily responded to some of the concerns. Let me rephrase that for you. As thousands of people virtue signaled.
She responded to the concerned comments where she revealed that she is actually living with her father, who has stage 4 leukemia. She says, "I am also immune compromised," she continued. "I have 2 young kids. Some people value their lives over freedom. Some people value freedom over their lives. We all make our choices with love and respect." Justin, how tumescent are you right now?
False dichotomy, Kate. What does tumescent mean?
Oh. It means your shorts are a little tighter than
You're filling out usual. Your shorts more than usual.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, it just shows how much of a tragedy it was that she ended up with Jack. But hey, we're going a weird direction here.
I know it's a false dichotomy, Justin, but she's going full Patrick Henry here.
Yeah,
and
no,
that was clearly a false dichotomy, but a rhetorical one that was necessary for the time.
Okay, because so far the only person before her we had was Vanessa Hudgens, and I'm pretty sure she was high in her video, so I don't know if it counts, but everything Vanessa Hudgens said was like, you know, you can't argue with it. It's like, yeah, this sucks, and people are going to die, but that's life, and we're going to just lock everyone in here because of this? That doesn't make any sense. That's basically what she said, and she was high, but there was no principled discussion of it. Evangeline took that and ramped it up to 10, and she made the points perfectly. And, of course, everyone came down on her. But, I mean, I can't find any faults in this logic, Daniel. The only fault you can possibly find is the collectivist point, where it's, oh, you're endangering other people, right? They're trying to say that, oh, you can have it and transmit it and endanger other people. But then that goes back to the point of, if you're in danger yourself, why are you going out? Daniel, why am I going outside and still seeing old people? I had to bring my cat to the vet yesterday, and there's a Publix next door, so I was like, oh, I'll pop in and see if they have toilet paper. They didn't, obviously, but you know what they had?
Too many old people.
It was all old people. It's like, I swear to God, is this a hoax, and it's just an excuse for old people to control the world and be able to go out without us because they're annoyed at us? Every time I go out in public, it's old people. Even when they were talking about spring break and they're saying the spring breakers, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, there were a lot of spring breakers. I'm not going to lie. But you know who there were more of? Old people. So I think her point's valid is, why is someone like her, who is immunocompromised, right? Why is someone like her not being given the choice to go out when the people who are most at risk are being given the choice to go out and no one's saying anything?
Yeah. It's really about, again, last week we were talking about ordering your values. It's really about ordering your values in this case. You have to understand what the risk is. You have to assess the risk. You have to take precautions, necessary precautions. All of us should be taking necessary precautions. And then you have to decide what you value. Do you value business as usual, quote unquote? Do you value your freedom? Or do none of these things matter to you? And I think some critical listeners will say false dichotomy, and we'll get into that in a little bit. William, hashtag business.
First? No.
What was that?
Just a quick thing about what you said. All of that is true in a perfect world, but we're now living in a world where we're not all people who have been on a hit show for 6 years. So we can't make the choice because it's been made for us, and that's the problem. There's no point in me going outside, Daniel. What am I going to gain by going outside?
A tan. You're in Florida.
That's true. But you know what? They vitamin locked D. They locked the pool at my apartment complex.
I've got a lock pick set. Why don't we can
they
we can
lock
we
the
can
pool?
Yes, they locked the pool.
The pool has chlorine in it.
It's a saltwater pool. I don't know if it has chlorine.
Oh. Anyway, okay. Thanks for. You could have just said yes, but all right. William, hashtag business as usual, plus some talk about freedom. Is business as usual an Atlas Shrugged reference?
Oh.
Oh man, Justin's chomping at the bit. I think
now
it might
I'm tumescent, or it's a tumor.
I think it might be. It's so strange to see how many people, how much it took for people to reveal their underlying principles, right? And it's good to see this in a positive direction, because lately on Twitter, I've been pretty disappointed with a lot of the people I follow to see that their underlying principles are very collectivist, are very altruistic. In a self-destructive way, right? And this is kind of a positive one. Yeah, it's got a false dichotomy in it. It's not perfect, but this is a more positive response, I think. This isn't, and some of, I know we've triggered some listeners with this talk, right? Because what happens is people who are caught in this panic loop, they hear this and they think, you're not taking this seriously. You're denying that. Basically, it's the equivalent of a climate denier, right? But by pointing out the flaws in the argument or the overreach or the fact that we're not using logic and reason is being seen as somehow not taking the thing seriously. And I am taking this seriously. I am judging people right now. Right, I'm looking at what they are saying, what they are doing, and judging their character. And this is a good time to do that.
I think it's a great time to do that. And it's a great time to understand that unless you're talking about an emergency situation where values literally aren't possible, right? So, and that's defined in philosophy, especially in objectivist philosophy. Things like lifeboat scenarios where it's two of you and you have to decide who to eat in order to survive. Like, values aren't possible in that scenario. But barring that stage of valueless context, philosophy still applies. Reason still applies. Ideas still apply. Your underlying, the way you approach the world should not be abandoned, should not be thrown out the window because there's a new danger in the world. Guess what? Humans are biological. The world is natural. There will always be new dangers. Always. And one of the key ways that we deal with those dangers is through reason, through using our minds, through evaluating critically assessments made of those things, and not just falling to what the government tells us. Even what quote-unquote experts tell us, we should look at the information experts give us, we should look at the information government gives us, and we should decide for ourselves. And as William said, deciding for yourself doesn't mean the false dichotomy of either you're taking it seriously or you are not. You can take it seriously, but also question the purported remedies for how to fix this thing. You can take it seriously and also question what people are saying about the deadliness, or question what people are saying about the actions you should be taking on a daily basis. In fact, I would argue that is taking it seriously, because you're taking seriously not just the immediate danger, but the long-term consequences. Life, by the way, is not about what happens in the next 2 weeks of isolation. Life is what happens about the next 2 weeks and for the rest of my life after that, for the 10 years after that, for the 5 years after that, for the 1 year after that. All of it has to be taken seriously, not just right now.
Daniel, you're exactly correct. And the point that William made about it's the same as climate change denial, or labeling someone a climate change denial, is exactly what you're speaking to. They're trying, and I'm saying they intentionally, because I don't think it's any specific one person, although I do think it's people who are power grabbing, and we'll see that in another story, but they're intentionally trying to make everyone feel like they're living in a situation where their lives are in immediate danger. Your life is in immediate danger because that makes people turn off their rationality and go into panic, fight, or flight mode. And that's what they want people in because they're easier to control in that case. It either control them socially, control them governmentally, however you want to control them. You get them in the panic mode. I mean, we see this in football. When do teams most often lose? They lose when the chips are down, they're behind in the score, and they start panicking and they start making more mistakes. Whereas statistically, you're more likely to win if you just say, I'm going to take this one play at a time and I'm going to deal with this. And then when we'll see what happens and hopefully we climb out of it. That's how 28-3 happened. That's how they came back from it. They didn't freak out. They took it one play at a time. And we don't do that because we've been trained our entire lives. And I think that's the greatest thing about what Evangeline Lilly is doing is she's thinking about her children because that is who this is going to affect the most. If you teach these kids that this is how you respond to this event, they're going to live in fear and panic mode their entire life. Because what pisses me off the most about all of this isn't that bad. And what I mean by the phrase that bad is, this is not the worst a virus can be. This is not the worst a biological weapon can be. And if we're panicking over this, heaven forbid there's a real virus, and I'm using real to mean, you know, kill 10 to 15% of the population. If there's a real virus, a real bioweapon, heaven forbid what that's going to fucking be like if we're already taking all the toilet paper and the hand sanitizer and everything. What the hell are we going to do then? And what the hell kind of things are we going to give up then if we're panicking over something that all statistics are showing the death rate's much lower than we thought. And we originally thought a high of 3%.
Right. Everyone take a deep breath. All right. So we've talked...
One more good thing. So William's talking about how this is a good sign and, you know, we're seeing this and you're calling her Patrick Henry. There's actually an Instagram account for downtown Los Angeles that posted something similar as well. The account posted the Bill of Rights, and then there was a backlash against them posting it, and they followed up with a long post saying, I posted that because this country is all about freedom, and our rights come from God, not from the government. And I think that these orders by Gavin Newsom violate the First Amendment, the right to peaceably assemble. So I think we all need to reflect. I'm not telling anyone what to believe, but we need to reflect. And again, not perfect, right? Evangeline Lilly had the false dichotomy. They had the natural rights coming from God argument, although that was John Locke's argument, right? It's not the objectivist argument, but that was John Locke's argument. This coming from an account for downtown Los Angeles, all hope is not lost. Remember, Evangeline Lilly is a Canadian. So we have a Canadian and an account from downtown Los Angeles making these posts. That's hopeful
to me.
These truly
are the ends of time.
I think the theme of this show will be, for the most part, what it means to take something seriously. But we also want to take a moment to make sure that we don't miss our core purpose of the show, which is to witness the farce.
Oh, baby.
and some people who
are... I submitted this story. I can't wait.
Taking it seriously? That's how I would phrase it. So thecut.com runs an article called What It's Like to Isolate with Your Girlfriend and Her Other Boyfriend. Yes. As the coronavirus forces millions of Americans to practice social distancing and stay in their homes, relationships are being put to the test. Suddenly, exes are reaching out to each other. Casual flings are contemplating whether they'll stay in touch. And co-inhabiting couples are confronted with whether or not their living styles are truly compatible. The situation is even more complicated when you're staying inside not just with your partner, but with your partner's partner as well. For the past few days, comedian Billy Procida, I'm not sure, host of The Man Whore podcast, has been hunkered down at his girlfriend Megan's house in Jersey City, where she lives with her other boyfriend. This is Billy's first polyamorous relationship, and while he doesn't know his meta-amour, is that how you say that? His metamour? that
Metamore,
well.
Yeah.
Is that like Metamore? Paramore? Only metrosexual?
I thought like the Amore above the Amore. That's because I think about philosophy, like the Metamore.
I think that's what it means. I mean, I think that's the combination of those two words, because it's not his lover, it's the lover of his lover. So he has to think of it on a, you know, the removed level.
He says he's doing his best to respect his space.
I have a joke.
Oh.
Based on what William said. Metamore is the Superman when you cross Metro Station in Paramore.
I'm glad we all paused for that. Thank you.
Really. You're welcome. Appreciate it.
And now he's given an interview about how he's holding up. So we can get into various parts of the interview that you find particularly amusing, Justin. But this goes back to a point you made last show, the show before that. I have no idea anymore. About general behavior, risky behavior. So I don't know if you want to bring that back up and set the context before we dive into specific points.
Yeah, the idea I was talking about was just don't act in risky behavior in general life, and you're going to minimize the possibility of contracting something like this or something like this spreading. And this is even a case of showing how that principle doesn't just work physically, biologically, right? It works psychologically as well. And I would say that this person's choices have led him into this situation, which has put him in extreme psychological danger because of the reality coming back and biting him. He was able to live this lifestyle because of, we've always talked about this before, how successful our society has been. So because of that, his risk was minimized because he was able to evade certain consequences. Well, now he can't evade the consequences, and he's living with them very directly. And that's where a lot of my questions come in about this.
Well, I'm sure there are many questions, and to read the full article, you can go to thecut.com, but some interesting questions
that were
asked.
No, you can go to themidside.com/podcast, and you can click on the outline for the episode and see it there.
Fine.
Yeah.
Marketing, whatever. So the cut asks, what's the setup? Where are you sleeping? What are you all doing during the day? And he responds, they have a 2-bedroom apartment here, so I've been staying in the guest room. For the last couple of nights, Megan slept in bed with me, but then last night she fell asleep with me, and then I woke up alone. I guess at some point in the night she went to Kyle's room and slept with him. We're on day 4 of me being here. William... I'll just ask a really simple question. What?
Well, I'm gonna point out a controversial thing here. It's very, very difficult. You can have a healthy polyamorous relationship. Reading through this article, this is not one of them. No clear boundaries. Wow. Like, they talk about the primary couple having relationship issues, and now you bring the third party into the house in the room next to yours? This poor guy. Like, not the guy that's being interviewed, but the other guy. He needs to get some self-esteem.
Really? This poor guy? Okay, yes. Okay, yes. But none of these people have self-esteem. Well, maybe the woman does. Maybe she's a narcissist. But I do not feel bad for either of these men. When I read this and it was like, oh yeah, they've been together for 2.5 years and we've been together for 9 months.
Wow.
My thought for both of these men was, what's wrong with you? And what I mean by that is, if you start talking to a woman and she says she's been in a relationship for 2.5 years, why do you keep talking to her? Especially if she's living with her boyfriend. Or did she move in with her boyfriend later? In which case, why did you continue to stay with her? And then the other guy, you're with her for that long and she starts dating another guy? Maybe that should tell you that you don't have all of her? And that speaks to one of the points in this article when I'm talking about the point Daniel brought up about being psychologically healthy, right? Not having risky behavior. He literally was saying in this article, oh, I was okay with it because, you know, and I'm okay with it now because I don't have to be her entire world. I don't have to be there to comfort her and give her all the cuddles. I think he even used the phrase all the cuddles, and it's like, oh my God. But you're just showing that you don't want to be in a relationship. You just want someone to fuck. That's it. That's all this is. That's why you're okay with she goes to sleep with you and you wake up and she's not in your bed anymore. And you're like, oh, whatever. She's just in another dude's bed.
Yeah. William, your theoretical point is well taken about the polyamorous relationship thing. But from my personal perspective, and that's all it is, I'm not saying this is universal at all. From my personal perspective, I can't literally think of one thing that is appealing about this to me personally. I can't think of one thing. In the context of child care, I can think of some things that are potentially helpful, which is why I always thought that it was a big joke by God or nature or whatever that it only took two human beings to create a child when you really need three or four to raise a child. But in terms of just the relationship mechanics of this, I cannot conceive of anything at all that is appealing about this.
I hear you. It doesn't make any sense to me either. And especially in the context we're given here, it doesn't make any sense in this context. Why bring in an already struggling relationship another party in? And during a crisis, it doesn't make any sense.
That is clear to me. You're dead nuts on that. I have what I think is a very good relationship. And I cannot imagine bringing a third person into it for 61% of the time. We lived with my mother. We just lived with another human being outside
this of... got weird.
Outside of relationship status. And I thought I thought our marriage was going to collapse into destruction. I cannot imagine living with someone who's then I have to have emotional concern for. Oh my God, I can't. Whatever. But I don't know what's appealing about this to anyone.
Well, and that's the thing. When William, you say in theory you can have a healthy polyamorous relationship. I understand what you're saying in theory, but I reflect on what Daniel was saying, and I reflect on the book, I believe it's called The Rules, I don't know, by Neil Gaiman, the guy who wrote the book on the game. He then wrote up a follow-up where he tried to have all these non-traditional relationships. He tried to be in polyamorous relationships. And when I see that, when I read that book and when I see this story, it's what I picture when I picture the type of people who want to be in polyamorous relationships, and I picture them people who are avoiding the responsibility of fully being with another person. And it's what Daniel said. When Daniel said what he said, that speaks to me that he is fully in his relationship with his wife because he understands the amount of commitment and deference and awareness it requires. But polyamorous relationships seem to me that it's people splitting their awareness so they don't have to fully be with a certain person because that's a lot of work and a lot of vulnerability. And I don't see how any polyamorous relationship can work. And to me, this is what is it they always say, that the situation doesn't make the man, it reveals the man? Well, this is a perfect example of that to me.
Maybe we should have Midsider Jason on at some point to re-explain this concept.
I think we can dig up an old podcast I did with him talking about this subject.
But, yeah. Well, I hope everyone enjoyed that very brief respite from virus
into
talk.
Farce.
Because we're going back to it.
From virus but to farce.
I think there were some viruses involved in that one. I think there were some viruses.
Different viruses. Hope you enjoyed that brief respite. If you need it, just go back and hit the 30-second button a couple times and relive that moment of not talking about the coronavirus, because here we go again. Coronavirus. The DOJ, Department of Justice, has asked Congress for new emergency powers amid the coronavirus pandemic. Politico is reporting that the Justice Department has quietly I don't know what that means in this context. Did they whisper it into their ear?
They went to the Hart Senate building and just whispered it into random people's ears.
I think I know what that means. I think that a lot of political maneuvering happens in a social setting where everyone knows what's going on. Oh, well, that person's trying to achieve that agenda. Sort of like House of Cards, how you could see who he was meeting with and all the conversations he was having. Whereas something like this, I would imagine, is a quick conversation between a couple groups and that's it.
Yeah, it just... Yeah, well...
It's a bad metaphor, but that's what they're going for.
Okay. So the quiet department. Wow. The Justice Department has quietly asked Congress for the ability to ask chief judges to detain people indefinitely without trial during emergencies. Part of a push for new powers that comes as the coronavirus spreads through the United States. Documents reviewed by Politico detail the department's request to lawmakers on a host of topics, including the statute of limitations, asylum, and the way courts' hearings are conducted. Politico also reviewed and previously reported on documents seeking authority to extend deadlines on merger reviews and prosecutions. Justice Department declined to comment. The move has tapped into a broader fear among civil liberties advocates. I love that phrase. We can talk about that phrase
us.
If you want. But and Donald Trump's critics that the president will use a moment of crisis to push for controversial policy changes. Already, he has cited the pandemic as a reason for heightening border restrictions. Oh, my God. Controversial to heighten border restrictions.
Wait, Donald Trump wants to heighten border restrictions.
And he has also pushed for further tax cuts as the economy withers, arguing that it would soften the financial blow to Americans. And even without policy changes, Trump has vast emergency powers that he could legally deploy right now to try and slow the coronavirus. So the question here, Justin, is how right were we actually when we predicted is not even the right word. When we spoke the obvious a few weeks ago, that the lasting effects of the government response from this virus would be worse than the virus itself. The government is literally seeking the power to detain people indefinitely when someone raises their hand and says, hey, what we have right now is an emergency.
When you make Donald Trump look like a libertarian, and that's what I hate the most out of all of this, right? Like, the way they just described Donald Trump is he sounds consistent. And this is the most consistent Donald Trump has been. And all of a sudden it's like, Justin's a Trump supporter, blah, blah, blah. And that's the thing about all of this is if you speak out against this growth in government power about not being a collectivist in your thinking, then people automatically shame you, shout you down and call you just fucked up and label you in certain ways. And it's messed up, and I don't even want to say it's leftists anymore. It's not, and you nailed it last time, Daniel. I believe it was last time or two episodes ago. This is people who have decided, and Evangeline Lilly said this, people who have decided they value their lives more than they value freedom, not seeing the overlap between the two. And that's all this is. And it's scary, it's fucked up, and you see the people who are power grabbing because of it. I mean, you want to talk about being correct. And again, this is just speaking the obvious. I said we would be on lockdown by Wednesday, didn't I?
Yeah.
I said we would. And what happened to California? It was Thursday, but California went to martial law on Thursday. And then New York City is starting, as we're recording this, the evening of Sunday, they're going under martial law for, quote, 24 hours. If you think that's only going to be 24 hours.
Illinois.
I got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you. That was good. I'm patting myself on the back of that one.
Oh, my God. Man.
No, it's just you knew this was coming. This is what I was just saying in the last story. It's revealing our character as a nation.
Yeah. It's funny that I'm not a Trump supporter, but has become the new I'm not a racist or a sexist, but, and then a statement that is clearly not racist or sexist, that is just based loosely in race or in sex.
But even that, Daniel, when you say I'm not a racist, but the people who are social justice, the people on the left, whoever, have tried to say that that's a dog whistle. if you say, I'm not racist, but I've noticed there are a lot of black people in the NBA, they go, oh, well, you're racist. That's why you said
that.
Only racists say that.
My point is, yes, that's all true. My point is simply that to sort of confirm what you're talking about, which is that we've even begun to tie Donald Trump with ideas of individual rights and freedom. The fact that Yaron Brook, famed objectivist, famed critic of the president, by the way, when he tweeted out the other day about questioning the policy of indefinite detainment, got bombarded with how he's a pro-Trump shill tweets and had to tweet out. He felt like he had to tweet out something that said, just so you know, I'm not a pro-Trump Fox News watcher. My point being that we have tied Trump. We've tied Donald Trump to questioning, to the idea of questioning absurd government tactics, that I now have to say I'm no Trump supporter, but hey, here's a libertarian position or here's an objectivist position. That is an absurd rhetorical position to be in. Absurd. Absurd.
And the reason it exists is simply because he will not go to a nationwide lockdown. They want him to go on a nationwide lockdown because that sets the precedent that they can do that. And he won't do that, not because of any stance on individual rights, but because there's a lot of places in this country where they don't need to go on lockdown because there's so much space between the people around them and there's so few cases that going on, they're already on lockdown. They already social distance. And those people tend to be who voted for him.
South Dakota.
So what is he going to do?
Been socially distancing since 1892.
Somebody should make that T-shirt and sell it.
I want to bring William in here.
My point is, it's pragmatic, Daniel. It's all pragmatic on Trump's part.
That's right, and that's my fear. By the way, you have some optimism to that pragmatism. I have a lot of fear with that pragmatism.
I only have optimism in it because it's on my side this time.
And I want to bring William in here, and maybe he can just comment on my transition here. But my point is, I have no faith that Donald Trump won't use a national lockdown, because as much as I praise the president early on for taking a calming, or attempt to take a calming stance to this whole thing, his response to the coronavirus has deteriorated very quickly. And whether that's because he just has advisors around him who are panicking, or whether he himself is panicking, which I doubt, I don't know. But the point is, his strong position from early on is eroding very fast. And it could be by next week that it is just, all of it is gone, and now we're on national lockdown, and he's going to use every power of the state to, quote-unquote, fix this thing, which won't fix it at all. Mm-hmm. But I have no faith that Donald Trump will do the right thing. I only know that by accident, perhaps, he has done the right thing in the past and is doing less and less right things as we move forward. William. Fewer and fewer right things.
I think,
William,
you're talking about the stimulus and things like that.
Yes.
Yeah. I agree. I think the counterbalance has always been the media in a weird, twisted way. There's a weird symbiosis. If Trump wants something, the media hates it. And vice versa, right? If the media says they want to do something and the general sentiment of the people is that they don't want that, Trump steps in to fill that space. So I think what you have to do, Daniel, is as precarious as it sounds, is trust the sense of life of the American people. And we're seeing this now, we're seeing a lot of people question the economic damage that this is causing and saying, wait, how long are we going to do this? What's the real numbers here? I mean, we talked about the article on Medium.com, Evidence Over Hysteria, which we would link, except for Medium took it down. So I'll post a link into the show notes of the Zero Hedge version. But we can't even, we've got to trust in this as long as people can speak about it, which is a whole nother subject, which we should probably touch on. What are and aren't we allowed to say? And how much longer is any discussion of COVID-19 going to be allowed on certain platforms? We've already seen basically news channels like Tim Pool completely demonetized every video that they talk about COVID-19. They get suppressed. But now we're seeing posts being pulled down by Facebook, Twitter, and even Medium. In the guise of, well, this is misinformation.
Justin, I want to talk about the economy thing. My thoughts are not totally clear and coherent yet, so if you want to interject, please do. But William, I keep seeing this come up, the thing you alluded to, which is this dichotomy between human lives and the economy. And it comes up in so many different ways, but the one that it comes up most pointed is basically saying, and the editor of Quillette, of all people, has really gone off the deep end with this dichotomy, which is basically, screw the economy, we're talking about people's lives here. With this idea that somehow the economy...
dichotomy, bro.
The falsest of dichotomies.
We'll never reach peak false dichotomy.
We never will, but man, this is approaching it in a way that I we haven't seen in a long time on this show. As if the economy, and South Park ridiculed this, as if the economy is some floating abstraction, something that we just, essentially like worship and can sacrifice to or take away from. But that's not, the economy is not something that is separate from your life. Your productivity, your life, your being, your ability to sustain yourself is all part of the economy. The economy is the abstract term we use to describe this thing, but it's the collective effort of everyone doing productive work. And when we talk about screw the economy, we need to save people's lives, you are saying screw people's lives, we need to end people's lives. And I mean that very literally in some cases. If people can't work, if people can't sustain themselves, what are they going to do? Supposed to do? Yes,
that
Justin.
Goes back to what Evangeline Lilly said. That's exactly what she was saying. You're asking me to not choose my life. We're basically saying all these people have to shut down their lives because these other people might die. Well, I don't even understand this from a utilitarian standpoint.
Well, yeah, it makes no sense from a utilitarian standpoint, but I'm not a utilitarian.
Generally their argument is utilitarian, right?
Yeah.
Generally their argument is we need to make sure the most number of people are okay. That's their argument for socialism, right? That's their argument for greater government intervention. Generally it's utilitarian. It's the idea that that's the whole basis of the 1% argument, right? Oh, well, 1% has the most. That's not fair. We need to maximize it for everyone. Well, what about now? You're not maximizing it anymore. Now, what are they using? What is their argument now? Now it's some old people might die? And now I've lost half the listeners because I said that.
Yeah, I don't want to be that callous about it. I understand.
I will.
I know, and you're using a specific rhetoric set that I won't use, but I understand why you're using it. My general point is, when we're thinking about all this, yes, you must consider the number of people who will die. You must also consider the massive devastation to real human beings' lives that will be wrought by the economic destruction brought about by the incoherent response to this. It is not an abstraction. It is literal human beings who will suffer and some will die because of the depression-like economy that is about to set in the United States. Does anyone have a history book? Do you look at what happened in the United States during the Great Depression? It's not as if we all sat around and went, well, we'll just wait for the economy to get back. Literal people died because of that economy.
So, Daniel,
and that
I have
will
a question
happen
for you.
Again.
I agree with everything you're saying, and I have a question for you based on what you're saying.
So I want to sum up, and then you can ask your question, just to integrate these two points, which is when you are, and by you I mean every individual, I mean businesses, I mean the government. When you are developing a response to something like this, you must evaluate all of those things, from the super concrete immediate deaths, from the people, and also the long-term effects on the economy, and then come up with a plan. And maybe that plan does involve 2 weeks of isolation, but it can't be indefinite isolation. There's no universe in which the answer can be indefinite isolation, and there's no universe in which the plan can be whatever the government decides tomorrow. Because those two things, indefinite isolation and pragmatic, random, spur-of-the-moment responses, are destructive to actual, real human beings' lives. Okay, that's my summation. Justin?
Yeah, well said. And it leads exactly into what I'm going to ask you. And I think you've already answered it, but let's make it explicit here. There is an argument that could be made here, based on the 1%, 99% approach, that this is a recalibration of society. And what I mean by this is we have seen examples where Mark Cuban was the first one to say, hey, all those people who work for the arenas are going to be fucked. So I want to start setting up a fund for them. And I think Zion Williamson down in New Orleans, the new rookie for the Pelicans, who's playing really well, I think he gave a boatload of his salary to supporting those people who work at the Smoothie King Arena. Is this a natural recalibration event? And what I mean by that is we're so fucked as a society that the world is punishing us, that the reality is punishing us. Therefore, we're starting to redistribute the wealth because we have to, because we're seeing how the way wealth has been distributed has made it so we can't handle an event like this. Or is this an event that is being pushed by the people who want to redistribute the wealth to force us to redistribute the wealth?
I think it's certainly more of the latter, insofar as I understand your first point. It's definitely more of the second. I would say that you don't have to. I mean, I know why you're looking at it that way, partially because Marxists look at it that way. And
I'm not looking at it that way. I'm giving the point of view that they would respond to you with.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm not saying you personally.
Okay.
But you could take that and evaluate it in a different way, which is simply that there are a million plus different approaches to this that rely more heavily on private industry and charity and human beings taking care of each other, the family unit, any number of things that would have been 99.99% better an outcome than the approach we're taking.
Daniel, right, I think that's a great point. That's the heart of people like Claire Lehman's misunderstanding of and misintegration of this situation.
She's the Quillette editor. Yeah.
Everyone is turning towards government as the answer for these things when that is not America. That's not how we do it. And every time I point that out to people, I'm on several threads talking and keeping up with a lot of friends and coworkers. That is the thing that they get stuck on. When they'll talk about how the president should do more, and I ask, why? Why? Why should the president do more? You should do more, right? This is your values. You should do more. And we see people like, who was it? The basketball dude?
Zion Williamson?
Yeah, doing more, right? Like giving money. And setting up charities.
The kid's like 20 years old too, right? It's like, fucking, this kid knows more about the way the world works than you do. It's like, Jesus, you should feel bad.
Yeah, all that is right. And to put your faith in government.
He's 19 years old. Zion Williamson is 19 years old. You assholes, look at yourself in the mirror, okay? 19 years old.
And to put your faith in government abstractly, or, my God, Donald Trump specifically, is giving over a lot of responsibility for your life and a lot of trust that is totally unwarranted. Totally unwarranted.
So last thing before we transition into the hopeful romantic here. Daniel, I gave you an out and you sort of took it, and I want to make it more explicit because it combines yours and William's points. I hinted at this last week. I talked about it last week. Why are people not taking care of their own people that they value? Make sure your family members that are immunocompromised or older are self-isolating. Why do we need the government to tell us to all do that? Why do we need everyone in California to be on lockdown? Why are we at a point where 50% of people, and I don't believe Gavin Newsom when he says that, why are we at the point where 50% of people in California could catch this? Because we're not taking care of our own houses. We're not taking care of the people we value. I don't believe that this is a natural event that's going to make us more Marxist, but I do believe this is a natural event because I believe reality always, as I said, shows the character of the man. I think this is showing us our character. And I think all of these responses and everything we're seeing, including the old people still fucking going outside, is showing what is wrong with us psychologically. It is revealing our weaknesses. It's weaknesses we've been talking about for a long time. And it is incumbent upon us. I don't know if that's the right word, but we must introspect now during this and afterwards and say, how can we get better as individuals? How can we get better as the collective the collective expression of our individual psychologies? How can we improve that so this doesn't happen again, or we can handle it better, or it will be worse the next time?
The word you're looking for is tumescent.
That is a perfect bow on this segment. Let's head into the hopeful romantic with JML. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events in the air timeline lapse. My made for TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused on. As always, if you want to join in this conversation during the week, please join our Discord channel. You can go to themidside.com/podcast. You can click on an episode, and within there, there's a link that you can join our Discord. There's been some great conversation this week. There's great conversation right before we recorded this episode. Gets outside perspectives on things. We were able to learn about the Pennsylvania lockdown that's going on that I didn't know anything about because I pay attention to California because I lived there. And you know, we get a lot about California, we get a lot about New York, but we were just asking about Washington on this show. So maybe you're in Washington and you can join the Discord and tell us all about it. So great conversation going on there. Go ahead and join in.
Yeah. And if you're a Patreon subscriber, you can listen to the show live as we make it, as one person is doing right now. So.
Yeah, and that's awesome to see. It invigorated me seeing that. I was like, hey, I thought we were losing listeners, but we got one in here now. So thank you, even though you're an Eagles fan. Okay, so last week I didn't do a review because we wanted to really focus on the coronavirus, but I want to start getting life back to normal, and I want to do a review this week. I saw Spencer Confidential on Netflix, starring Mark Wahlberg. Do either of you know anything about this movie?
No, sir.
You sent me a screenshot. That's the extent to which I've ever heard of this movie.
This is apparently, and I didn't realize this till after I had watched it, this is apparently a remake of the television show Spencer for Hire. Have you heard of that show?
Just now.
Oh, okay. Spencer for Hire was an 80s PI show set in Boston that co-starred Avery Brooks. William Avery Brooks played Captain Sisko on Deep Space Nine. That's like how he got his start. So without Spencer for Hire, there would have been no Avery Brooks as Captain Sisko. Who knows who would have been? Maybe Tony Todd. No, he was already Worf's brother. So who knows who would have been Sisko? It's also that show is based on a series of books. So I haven't seen the original show. I haven't read the books, but holy shit, if you've ever wanted to watch a movie that's very Boston, watch this movie. So it starts out with Mark Wahlberg is in prison because he was a cop and he beat up the chief of police in Boston. and he went to jail for that, for disturbing the peace. He was in jail for 5 years. And it's actually filmed in Walpole State Prison, which is a real prison you can pass if you drive a certain way to Foxborough Stadium. And I was like, holy crap. And then he gets out of prison, and one of the other cops, to welcome him back, brings him Dunkin'. And they don't mention it. He's just like, I brought you a donut. And it's literally a Dunkin' Donuts bag. I
can hear you getting tumescent right now.
And that's how I was the entire movie. I was like, holy crap, this is very Massachusetts. But beyond that, the best way to describe it is a Steven Seagal movie from the 80s starring Mark Wahlberg. Here's somebody outside of the system who the system says is bad, but the system is corrupt, and he has to work to take down the system in order to have justice be done. And it's just an action movie. It's an action movie where he's good, the good guys are good, the bad guys are bad, and he's going to fight them, and you know he's going to win, but it's the ride along the way that you enjoy it. It helped me forget about what was going on for a couple hours, and it made me look forward to the sequel. So if you enjoy 80s action movies, if you think we need more of them, if you enjoy Mark Wahlberg, and if you just want to see good guys be good and bad guys be bad, and you like the whole, well, first of all, the Boston attitude, right, which is very similar to the whole rugged individualism where it's like, I'm just going to fucking tell you the way it is, and you're going to stop fucking bothering me about it. I mean, there's a line at the end of the movie where his girlfriend or whatever is like, you're going to buy me a lobster. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to buy you a lobster. What are you going to do with it? And she says to him, I'm going to throw it in your fucking face. What do you think I'm going to do? I'm hungry. I'm going to eat it. And it's just, that's very much sums up Boston, and it very much sums up the movie. So I would highly, highly recommend this movie. Now, here's the problem, guys. We have no trailer takedown because there are no movies coming out anymore. So why don't we just talk about that issue? Christopher Nolan published an opinion piece in the Washington Post, and I appreciate how quickly he was able to do this. It's almost like he had it on tap because he knew something like this would happen. He just had to put it out earlier. All about how the headline is, movie theaters are a vital part of American social life. They will need our help. Now, if theaters still exist, I will be back in movie theaters as soon as I can. I don't know what movies are going to come out this summer. I mean, Fast and the Furious 9 has already been pushed back a year. Black Widow's on hold indefinitely. The first summer movie was pushed back. Daniel, did you see the new Gru movie got pushed back?
No.
Yeah, they said that's not going to be released July 2nd. So I don't know what's going to happen with all these movies, what's going to come out when, because the schedule is all going to be fucked up, yeah, right? Because all these movies...
A couple movies are accelerating their on-demand and purchasability on, like, the Apple store and stuff like that.
Yeah, or I think Onward is now... Yeah, Onward is now on Disney Plus, right?
Not quite yet. April 3rd, I think. It's available to purchase right now.
Oh, okay. That's how someone was watching it. All right. So, yeah, they're going to put that on there. It's available to purchase. Birds of Prey is going to go on. So, yeah, William, everything's being accelerated with that as well. So stuff that was meant for theater is going to be released in all on demand. And then people, you know, they say, oh, well, I have a really good TV. I have a 4K TV. I have a really good sound system. My question for you all about this is, do you agree with Christopher Nolan that there is a value to the movie-going experience on its own going to the theater? I think yes, and I want to hear what you all think. Daniel, I know you have a hard time going to theaters now. Has that made it worse for you? Do you miss going to theaters to see new releases?
Yes. A qualified yes, but certainly a yes. And I think there is maybe an oddly increasing value to movie theaters in our age of distraction. Not to sound like an old person, but even while we do this show, I'm sometimes on my phone, which is why I never reply to you, Justin, when you say quote-unquote jokes.
That's okay. I play games on my phone while you all are talking.
Yeah.
TFT Mobile point being, released. Number one in the iTunes store.
Point being that when you go to the movies, or at least when I go to the movies, I feel not just the ability to, but in fact the social pressure to leave my phone in my pocket, focus on the movie, partially because of how expensive it is, and really just enjoy the cinematic experience, which fills your full visual frame and gives you sound that you're not going to get in your home and gives you a sort of level of darkness, although, side point, theaters are not dark enough anymore.
They're leaving
their lights on. Yeah. Terrible. That you just can't get at home. You just
can't. Well, that's a safety issue.
Okay, I don't care. Turn the lights off.
No, I'm not saying they're right. I'm just telling you why they're doing it.
Yeah. So I like that element of theaters, and when I get to go, it is a type of cathartic experience because it's sort of a mini reset. Yes, I am engaging in media, but I'm only engaging in one media at a time, and it's a storytelling media, which is, I think, important for humans to engage in. So I think the value is increasing, actually, and I would like to get back to going to movies. I used to go to movies more regularly. My wife, before Isaac, used to go once a week at minimum to see a movie. She was one of the early adopters of MoviePass, and R&B. That was kind of her thing. So, William?
You know, I don't get to go to movie theaters all that often. My schedule just doesn't permit it. But I do enjoy premieres. And I think I, too, will be searching for a premiere worthy of going to once the COVID-19 madness is over. There's something to be said about the social aspect of it. The audience reactions and, you know, I remember watching movies with applause at the end, right? And things like that. You can't get that at home. I mean, I applause at home, but it's just not the same. And the sound that can be produced, at least with my home stereo, which is not cheap, it's pretty good, cannot produce the same experience as the movie theater. And I know a lot of theaters have switched to digital, but occasionally you'll still be able to see an older movie on film from a film projection, and there is something different about that. Not to get all Brett Easton Ellis on everyone, but there's something different about film, the film experience, than the very soap opera Marvel movie sort of experience.
Yeah, who was it? Nolan, speaking of, when his last movie came out, the war movie, Dunkirk, can't remember anything in my old age, my coworker Matt and I drove to Baltimore to actually see it on 70mm film IMAX, and it was a cool experience. Really put you in the movie, in the sense that I've complained on this show before that I didn't think it was much of a movie in the storytelling sense, but that it was a cinematic experience unlike anything I've ever witnessed, partially because of the actual film.
Yeah, there's a lot of science behind that too. That's just not a subjective thing. The slower frame rate on film, the 24 or 30 frames per second, it seems more real. Your mind does more filling in. It's much the same way as when we talk about how expressive and emotive animation is versus some live action movies, right? The higher frame rates can dip you into the uncanny valley much quicker.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree completely about the social aspect of it. I think what it has to do with is affirming your values with everyone around you, because I do think there's an important aspect of connecting with your community to make sure everyone's on the same page. I know one of the reasons that I would feel distant from people or that made me want to leave California is there are movies that I would be thoroughly enjoying and everyone around would be very uncomfortable at, or stuff where I would laugh at and nobody else would laugh because I'm getting the joke and no one else is. And I know that makes you feel more of a community. And, you know, that's sort of why we have things like the Snyder Cut movement develop, because people feel that camaraderie based upon that shared value. So I do think that that experience is very important. And it's something, you know, Dr. Drew said about being social before, where he's like, even if you just go to the gym, that can be being social, because you're around people who value things that are similar to you. So I for one, agree with Nolan, especially what he knows that he's designing the art, as you pointed out, Daniel, differently than he would if he was designing it for the small screen, that there is still a difference. Even though, William, as you pointed out very well, Marvel has just become a television series on the big screen, there are still directors out there trying to make movies solely for the big screen, and we don't want to lose that because that's an important value of art. There's an important value, especially, as Daniel pointed out, as we become more disparate. We need to bring that to come together. And that's, to bring this back to what's going on, that's one of the greatest tragedies that we had to give up our movie theaters. Because what's happening now is one of my greatest fears, and is why I don't want to live in a big city like New York City. What happens? What are we doing? Oh, well, you just go live in your box and everyone will be in their little individual boxes. It makes me think of the end of the Cabin in the Woods, where in this ritual they did, they had all the monsters in little boxes, and they would take the box down and put it out, and they would open the box and release the monster, and then presumably the monster would go back in the box for the next year, and they would put them back on the shelf, and they're just all in their boxes. That's what we're becoming. And I think one of the steps to do that is to make sure we don't give up the theaters, because they could do it with gyms too. It's that there's going to be a backlash after all this. And the backlash is going to be, oh, look at all of the unhealthy things we did to spread germs before. Why are we interacting so much, and why are we having public spaces in this way? What is the real role of public spaces? And places like movie theaters, gyms, and amusement parks, Disney's going to be on this battle, right? Disney gave up all plastic straws. The government didn't tell them to in Florida. They still did it. They did in California because they were told to. But Disney's going to be the front lines of this battle. How do we deal with public spaces now? There's going to be a lot of people who are going to say we shouldn't have as much public spaces and we shouldn't have as much interaction, because all it does is spread germs and endanger us. And it may be funny to hear an individualist saying that, but individualism does not mean there's no value to collective action and there's no value to being a collective and being a group. It just means you think of us as a unit of an individual, and you realize that what makes that collective enjoyable is that you can all come from all over the world and go to Disney and share that experience together. That only has value. And the individual experience only has value if the collective spaces exist as well. We need both of them. And I think Nolan's really speaking to that. And I think it's important that we remember that when we come out of all of this. But do you think, Daniel, that's what everyone wanted to really hear us talk about? Do you think all episode they wanted to hear us talk about the coronavirus, and they wanted to hear us talk about Christopher Nolan and movie theaters?
I think there was probably something else that happened this week in the news that they wanted to hear us talk about.
Oh, great. Let's do it. Let's talk about Tom Brady in Tampa Bay in Belichick, your premises.
Go talk to the geniuses that are online.
I don't want to live on this planet anymore.
my face, your face, instant face. Go talk to whoever you want that does that stuff.
Well, I think that was a great segment.
That was actually really funny, William. I was trying so hard not to laugh during the music. That was executed well. We will be recording a whole Belichick Your Premises episode on it. I just wanted to do some sort of acknowledgement on it. We had another listener chime in and say, let's talk about Tom Brady running away from Mahomes. I don't think he could. I think if you tried to run away from Patrick Mahomes, he would somehow just find another gear and still pass you. So that brings the end of this episode. Look for the Belichick Your Premises episode later this week. For now, what did we learn this trip, William?
Well, I learned that it's not all doom and gloom. There is still farce to be had.
Daniel?
I learned that Tom Brady can run, which was... I didn't know he could still do that.
It's always been funny to watch him run, even back in college. It's like he's running in slow motion compared to everyone else on the field.
Justin, what did you learn this week?
I learned that the tide is turning, and I think that America is not as far gone as we may have feared, as I may have personally feared. And, you know, when Evangeline Lilly makes me luminescent, as you said, is that the word?
Makes you tuberculosis.
Tuberculosis makes me TB. TB and TB gives me TB. No, when she says stuff like that, it makes me hopeful, and it makes me upset that my old Kate shirt from Lost I threw away. Maybe I should have kept that thing.
Well, we hope you learned something this week, or we hope that you understand our approach to this topic maybe a little better than from the previous weeks.
Kill all the old people.
That's right. And if you learn something, or if you agree with us, or if you disagree with us, even more importantly, why don't you let us know at the Midside Everywhere on social medias or in our Discord channel. You can let us know. You can go to themidside.com/podcast and binge listen to years worth of podcast content if you're really that bored during social distancing, quarantine, or if you're in California, New York, or Illinois, forced by the point of a gun to stay in your home. You can also go to themidside.com/...
I'm going to assume Washington too, Daniel. I'm going to assume Washington.
Not yet, as we're recording this. as we're recording this, no martial law yet. You can go to themidside.com/store to get your Midside merch. I haven't said it in so long that I've forgotten.
Yes,
but I doubt
store.
It'll be shipped to you in any timely fashion, because even Amazon has stopped shipping non-essential products in this time. So
the post office is still going. I'm still getting mail.
Post office, rain, snow, sleet, hail, or corona, apparently. They'll deliver your mail, which you should be bleaching as it comes into your home. Just kidding. What else? Oh, leave us a 5-star review on everywhere you can, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, if you think that our content is worth listening to or not. Remember, 5 stars are also for if you think we're terrible. Just leave us a comment telling us so. As long as you click 5 stars, I do not care. And then thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us, Libertarian Allies. Everyone's quote-unquote a libertarian in a pandemic. Patreon.com/TheMidside. We'll let that go for now. And then tell a friend about the show if you think what we have to say is insightful or insane. Either way, tell your friends about it. Let them hear it. And you can bring the digital pitchforks our way in the future. And until next time, we love you.
Man, talk about a false dichotomy, bro. This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Emelzneski reminding you that if things get tough, you know, like they are, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a tumescent day. I think everyone
Wash
has stage fright from all the listeners in the channel.
It's true. 2 live listeners. That must be some sort of record.
That is a record.
I'm tumescent.
Wash your hands.
Oh, one of them's typing. What's he going to say?
Don't worry, Arch. We'll wait.
Yeah.
This is it's not as if we're recording a show.
Fair enough. I will start adding everyone before.
That's annoying, but we can do it.
We can do it. And also, we'll plug it when we plug the Discord. Thank you for the feedback.
And
have a nice day.
I think what we should do, and thumbs up, guys, if you agree, we should probably have a time this week where we all join the Patreon-only voice channel, and we can talk to some of the Patreon folks.
Yeah, I think that's a good one, too. I'll do that.
I can figure that out.
All right, let's
sounds good.
Let's post that in the Patreon only channel and vote on a time, and we'll knock that out.
All right, is all this going to be the tag? Yeah,
I guess it's the longest tag ever. Hands.